Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast on the Youth Critic Network.
Whisper something in your ear.
Good God Almighty. You know, they put themselves in danger, girls like that.
It was a perverted thing to say.
You'd think you'd learn by that age, right?
Please lay down. What are you doing?
It's okay, hey, you're silent.
What are you doing? Hey, I said, what are you doing?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is David Weiser from Film Assessment.
Hey, everybody.
And David, we are talking about two different movies. But the first one we're just going to go ahead and do is News of the World.
Ladies and gentlemen. My name is Captain Jefferson Kyle Kidd, and I'm here tonight to read the news from across this great world of ours.
So they pay you to tell stories.
I ain't never heard of that as a thing a man can do.
Well, it's not a rich man's occupation, as you can see.
Hey! Stop! Stop! I'm not gonna hurt you!
Do you understand English?
Oh, yeah, I call that,
So we're going to talk about News of the World. We did on the slight thing, it does say we're going to talk about Promising Young Women. We will, but we're going to Promising Young Women and News of the World, but we are going to go ahead and just do News of the World kind of very quickly because it's a Paul Greengrass movie. Paul Greengrass is a staple of the film, film community because of the Bourne films. Captain Phillips, United 93, so on and so on. So we'll review that kind of very quickly, and then we'll go into Promising Young Women, which is the movie I think we're both more eager to review. So, David, what'd you think of News of the World?
It was fine. It was entertaining. It was a decent Western. I think the relationship between Tom Hanks and the girl played by Helena Zegler, I believe that's how you say her last name. That was definitely the core of the movie and the most compelling part for me was their budding friendship. But I also feel like it didn't really explore it in depth particularly, even though that's what the whole movie's about, which was kind of like, it feels very their relationship feels kind of superficial in a sense.
You know, it's weird because when we think of Paul Greengrass, we think of the shaky cam, the documentarian like feel of his movies. And while I'll give props to the production design for making a very accurate looking depiction of Texas or of the West as it was back in the day, I came away with this like I don't know if it's because it was shot on digital or it just feels so much like a History Channel movie. And it's not even a slide at the History Channel. But for a movie, it just feels so like Paul Greengrass is bending over backwards to not make it like, you know, his kind of movie. Because his kind of movie doesn't really fit with the Western, like what we think of a Western trope. But the problem is he's bending over backwards and it's not really working for him. And then on top of that, there's some really... From a director that's known for action, Paul Greengrass's action scenes here are kind of terrible. Like, they're kind of a chore to watch. Especially, like, I know everyone talks about the shootout, but that's like, you know, that was in the trailer and then in this movie. But it's kind of like the only exciting thing in the movie. And even that's kind of like passable at best.
Yeah.
But the performances are still good. The performances from Helena, let me pull it up. Here it is. From Helena Zingel, I hope I pronounced that right. And Tom Hanks, I mean, all really good performances. Like, there's nothing wrong with their performances, but it's just, I think you hit it on the nail. It kind of feels artificial, but also, I would also add, it feels so routine.
Yeah, and the sequence of events feels very serialized in a sense. Like, there's not one overarching antagonist. There's just a series of brief obstacles that they overcome within like 10 to 15 minutes or so. And it's like on to the next obstacle. That's basically the structure of this movie.
Yeah. And I wouldn't necessarily mind that, but the journey itself is not that interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't mind a serialized story. I don't mind.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't mind either. It was just kind of like what I was saying earlier. I think it would have worked if maybe they dug in a little. They just needed to dig in deeper.
Yeah.
Like, there's good stuff. There's a good foundation. They just didn't use it enough.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, it's not only that they don't dig. It's not only that they don't dig deeper into it. It's that the journey, you kind of feel like you know where this movie's going to go. Because mm-hmm. this movie kind of feels like a whole bunch of other films. It kind of feels, you know, it has that kind of similar trope of other films. I really just wasn't impressed with the story. I think for me, the biggest problem with the movie is this movie really doesn't give like Native Americans any, it just kind of makes them the villain, but they're not really the villain. And then, you know, they make it sound, it's kind of like The Searchers, but the opposite. If that makes sense. I don't know if you've seen The Searchers.
I have not. So
it's an old John Wayne Western where he goes and tries to save this one girl from a tribe, and it's basically, it's homaged in the Breaking Bad finale with Walter and Jesse at the end. I just really wasn't that big of a fan of how they treated this girl. Like I know she was kidnapped by natives, but then this is a girl who is basically inclimated, like, and being raised by this tribe. Like, I never got the sense that she was ever any danger, but she was kidnapped from this and taken away from her tribe. I'm trying to make sense of my thoughts here, but what I'm trying to say is I wasn't really that into this idea that the story pivots that, you know, she was saved by these natives and now she has to acclimate to life. And even though the life that she had with the savages, it's like, it never sounds that bad. It never sounds like, oh, this was a problem for her. This was a problem for this child to be raised in this way. But that's my opinion. Maybe that's my read. And also, it's been like 2 weeks since I've seen this movie. So, yeah. I wasn't really impressed. I really didn't like the storyline with her and her having me jumped around But it does have a good conclusion. I'll say that. It does have a good conclusion. We'll get to that in just a second. What did you think of Hank's performance?
He's great as per usual. You know, I can't really think of a bad performance. Oh, well, actually one just came to mind. The Circle. I don't know if you remember that movie. It came out in 2016, 2017. I had Emma Watson in it.
I do. Yes, I do, actually. I don't think
it was... I don't know. It wasn't an awful performance, but the movie itself was pretty terrible.
It's a mixed bag, and I wish James Ponsalt the best, it's weird. The Circle... Well, it's weird because that whole movie doesn't have a conflict until it does. And then when it does the conflict, it kind of does it poorly. So it feels like a forced thing, but yeah, but that's here or there. That's The Circle. But yeah, here he is really good. I don't know if it's Oscar worthy, but it's really good.
No, I wouldn't say that, but it's a good Hanks performance. I wouldn't put it like among like the very top best performances he's ever given, but it's a pretty good performance. He rarely disappoints with like I rarely watch a movie with Tom Hanks and think, oh wow, that was kind of a letdown in terms of his performance, at least.
If it's ever a letdown, it's more because I don't know if it's not necessarily Hanks's fault. There's nothing, he was not working with much. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I always, you know, Hanks always delivers. I mean, even last year when he did the Mr. Rogers movie, he was so good in that movie that, you know, he brought that character to life, even though he doesn't necessarily look like Mr. Rogers, but he still brings that character to life. So, but here, I think he does very good work. And I mean, he brings Captain Kidd to life here. It's a good performance. I can't say much more because there's nothing much more noteworthy other than it's a good performance. But what did you think of Greengrass's turn to the Western?
It very much just kind of felt like a typical Western, and there wasn't really much that really made it stand apart from other Westerns in terms of, I don't know, it just kind of felt like a Western movie. Like, it didn't really feel like it had Paul Greengrass's spin on a Western or like anything particularly meaningful to make it stand apart from the rest. I don't know, it was just kind of underwhelming for Paul Greengrass because it was kind of a chore to sit through.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know, because I feel like the pieces are there. I'm not sure. I don't know, like the whole like middle stretch of the movie, like the whole journey just wasn't very compelling in terms of the story.
Yeah. Before we move forward, do you want to go into spoilers and talk anything about specific scenes?
I liked the scene where he comes across that town of people where like he basically like introduces a story to them and they like rise up against their town leader dude who's like basically like enslave them in a sense. Like, I don't know. I thought that was a cool scene. It's very brief, but.
That is the best. I think that's the best scene in the movie because it's the most, that and the scene where earlier in the movie where they read the news and he's the one that has to calm them down. So there won't be a struggle between the blue soldiers and or basically the Union soldiers and the townspeople in this small Texas town. And it's a great scene because it's a way, because I feel like where Greengrass is more interested in is those scenes. The scenes where he goes to the racist town or the scene where he brings these, Union soldiers and townspeople to a, mutual understanding. It's those kind of scenes where I think Paul Greengrass loves the idea of Captain Kidd, this kind of character that reads the news and delivers the news in a way that rallies people the way that news should be. Like, it's this idealized way of, the news. But that's not what the movie's about. Or it's a side plot for the movie.
Yeah, I think if that had been more the foundation of the story, maybe it would have been more interesting. Mm-hmm. Like it just seems like such a no-brainer because that's his occupation, that would be a bigger part of the story. But for some reason, it wasn't. And while I liked the relationship between him and the girl, I feel like that they leaning so heavily towards that, kind of just makes it like another generic Western. Like, I've seen this premise a million times, and I've seen it done better a million times, So,
and I've seen it look better too.
Yeah. One weird thing that stood out to me, that I don't know that anyone's talked about. I haven't really looked into News of the World discourse, but...
because, it's rampant.
But one thing that was a little weird to me was... So apparently this is set only 5 years after the end of the Civil War. So I was confused about what Captain Kidd's age was. Because at the end, when he goes to the house and you learn that his wife had died while he was at war, they showed a picture of her and she looked pretty young, and if she had died during the war, that would have only been of like a few years earlier. And so it's just kind of this weird question to me, like, how old is Tom Hanks supposed to be? How old am I supposed to think Tom Hanks is supposed to be?
Maybe Captain Kidd found his wife in his 40s. You never know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what to say to that, because clearly, Tom Hanks was the big get for this movie in getting it probably green light. And yeah, it's an odd choice.
It's one of those things that, it's a small detail, but, if you go down the rabbit hole, it gets confusing. You're just kind of how old is his character supposed to be? Is there this big of an age gap between him and his dead wife? What's going on with all this? And, I don't know. The age gap thing isn't a huge issue. People are making a big deal about that with Malcolm and Marie or whatever. And if we want to talk about that, we can. But to me, it's not that big of a deal. It's just something that's weird. That's if you go down the rabbit hole, you're just okay, I don't really know how old his character is actually supposed to be, because he looks like he's Tom Hanks's actual age. So I would guess in his 50s or 60s. Are they trying to lead me to believe he's younger?
To be fair, maybe I'm misremembering, but people did age terribly back then. So I don't know if it was that much, but I remember people being people didn't not take care of themselves, but they didn't have proper, they didn't have what we had to kind of stay up to date. I don't know. I can't make excuses for a moment like that, because it's weird, but whatever. I don't, yeah. But I'm sure it'll come up in the discourse. I mean, this movie technically does come out on POVD next weekend, so who knows?
With the other movie we're going to talk about, there's our segue.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I don't recommend News of the World. David, you were lukewarm?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so let's talk about Promising Young Women.
Every week, I go to a club. I act like I'm too drunk to stand. And every week, a nice guy comes over to see if I'm okay.
You okay?
You are so pretty. I am a nice guy.
Are you?
1, 2, 3, 4.
I thought we had a connection.
Okay. How old am I? What are my hobbies? What's my name? Sorry.
David, why is this one of the most interesting movies of 2020?
It's such a... I just loved it so much. Carey Mulligan's performance is the most talked about thing from it, but it's just, she's incredible. Emerald Fennell, I believe that's how you pronounce her name. She wrote and directed this. This is her first narrative feature. She's done a documentary or a short, I believe. Maybe I'm getting mixed up with someone else, but I know this is her first feature film. She's done at least a short film or a documentary. I can't remember which, because I also Darius Marder, who directed Sound of Metal. I was writing reviews for them simultaneously, and they both, this Sound of Metal and Promising Young Woman are both of their first feature films. And one of them did a documentary previously and the other one did a video short. So I don't remember which. Anyways, for her first feature, like, this is just incredible work. And it's suspenseful. It's genuinely riveting. Like, this, just the premise alone is really intriguing. Like, this kind of like revenge thriller through the kind of a Me Too lens, I guess you could say, of this idea of like targeting men who are like, I guess, predators or like take advantage of women. And like, that's really compelling. And then like the ending is just such a jaw dropping, like, it's so good. And like the plot twists in this movie are like well set up, but like you don't see them coming. Like what happens with Bo Burnham's character, which we'll get to when we talk to spoilers. But like, that was, took me by surprise. I had an inclination that something was up with him because someone had like said something about it online. So it was very vague. So I didn't know exactly what was going to happen. And I had a darker thing in mind for my prediction as I was watching the movie, which turned out to be incorrect. But what actually happened took me by surprise.
Okay, so just to clarify, I don't think Emerald Fennell did a documentary, but she's an actress and writer for shows like Killing Eve. And she worked, but she's been an actress on a bunch of others, bunch of things. So, but I don't see a documentary.
Direct a short film?
According to Wikipedia, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. I remember on IMDb, she had directed one other thing prior, but she had quite a few writing credits.
But yes. Yes. So Promising Young Women is a very inch. It's really good. And I'm taken aback because this is a, you know, this is a dark, this is a very delicious horror comedy, but there's no horror. There's only, I think, one person dies in the whole movie. And there's no blood or anything. So it's very, very much a dark horror comedy. And I really, you know, got into it. And on top of that, you know, it's not just predators. It's people who think that are the good guys or think that they're progressive, but really they're just, you know, they're just full of shit. And the whole movie is basically a 2-hour conversation about the kind of scummy men that walk among us and are predatory to women. And to women and other people that are seen as weak or in seen in need of help. And that's where really like the most fascinating idea comes from, is this woman seeking revenge, but not doing it in a way of like, oh, she's going to kill this person or get this woman, you know, or get this daughter raped or whatever. It's more of a psychological thriller. She's putting, you know, her victims through, you know, a way that will make them vulnerable. She's putting them through a situation that makes them mentally and vulnerable. And that's what's the most compelling part about the movie, is how it makes all of the victims in this movie vulnerable but accountable for their actions.
Yeah, when we get into spoilers, I do want to talk about more about her plan, because I thought it was like brilliant in terms of the mind games that she was playing. But I'm not really sure how much I can say without going into spoilers. So whenever you're ready to do that.
All right, spoilers. It's a good movie. Me and David recommend it. Please go see it. It's opening on POVD on Friday. And it's in theaters right now, but obviously if you can't see it in the theater, just wait till it's on POVD Friday morning. Anyway, go ahead, David.
In terms of when you're like sitting there watching what's happening with Allison Brie's character, and you see like what she's really like planning, and like your mind goes to this dark place, like, oh, she's really gonna do that to her. She's gonna like put this. She literally got her drunk to get it to make her basically be have her experience something similar to what happened to her friend. And then I loved the twist later when you learn that she didn't actually commit to, like, she made her believe that, but it wasn't actually what happened. That's what I really loved about it. Like, I was like, that's the psychological part of it, in terms of not actually committing to it, but like making them suffer, like in terms of what having to live with that survivor's guilt that's actually non-existent, like, but they don't realize it. And then what she does to the principal or the dean of the college, and making her believe that she dropped her kid off with some men in a hotel room, and it was just like, oh, and like the way she kind of brought up this valid point, like she's kind of like doing this kind of to get back at these people that didn't really take the thing seriously that happened to her friend. And like it's kind of like this like poetic justice in a sense, like of like kind of having them like, okay, you didn't care at the time, or you didn't believe what she was saying or take it too seriously, but now that it's happening to someone close to you or you yourself, now you understand.
Absolutely. And I have a question for you. What do you think she had in mind for the attorney of Alan Monroe?
That's another thing. I loved that scene. I was surprised to see Alfred Molina show up. Great actor. Just didn't expect him to be in this movie.
Great character and,
actor. Yes. And I loved his scene where he was genuinely distraught about what he had done, and that it, like, he asked for forgiveness, and she, like, actually showed him mercy because she didn't commit with whatever her plan was. I think it was kind of insinuated she was going to have the guy beat him up or something, because of the fact that like there was that guy standing there. She like, he was like, do I still get paid? And he looked kind of like rough, you know? So that was my guess. She was going to have him like rough him up, but I don't really know. I looking at what happened to the other two, I feel like there was more to it than that. It's just like, I don't really know that there's much more to go off of to guess what she was going to do.
I don't know.
The final reveal, when we'll get there, of how that, like, she was playing the long game and like managed to outmaneuver everybody in a sense, even though she did end up dead in the process. But
yeah, she's the one dead body or dead death that I mentioned earlier. But yeah, well, the reason why I love the Alfred Molina scene is because, you know, and it takes a great actor like Alfred Molina to pull that off. I mean, you see that not only the genuine like sorrow he feels, but also like but it's also grief, the torment. I mean, he even explains, like, you know, I mean, when we started doing this, we used to go in people's garbage to look for, you know, stuff. Now we look on the internet, and I mean, you just see him all like just psychotic, you just see that, you know, psychological breakdown, just, you know, all the pieces of it just there. And yeah, and the reason it's so great is because later when we find out about Bo Burnham's character, and you see how that plays out with, you know, without that, you know, and he doesn't have that amount of sorrow or that amount of guilt that he holds over it. It makes everything more powerful because that Bo Burnham's character, he genuinely does fear for his job. He genuinely fears for what will happen to him, but he doesn't still understand the weight of what Carey Mulligan's character is, you know, reconciling with. You know, he doesn't
understand. I think he does by the end of the movie, perhaps, but
in that moment,
point, no,
Cassie. Yeah. But in that moment, he doesn't quite get like Cassie's, you know, what, you know, Cassie, you know, not only needs from him, but what Cassie needs to see from him. Also, I don't know if you noticed, but all the quote-unquote bad guys in this movie all played like good guys in other movies, or all played like decent people in other movies, if that makes sense.
I'm not too familiar with those actors, so I didn't notice that. I mean, I'd seen them in other things before, but not. Mm-hmm. But usually they're like small supporting roles that I can think of, at least.
Right. I mean, like, you know, yeah, but... Yeah, I mean, like, people like Chris Lowell and, like, a lot of these characters usually are playing the good guy or the, you know, the nerdy kid that is supposedly good, but particularly Christopher Mintz-Plasse's character. But I really found that interesting. And then I kind of like that. And I kind of, watching the movie, I kind of love the idea that she very much holds all the guilt of what happened because she did not go to the party that Nina went to, or what, and that's where she, you know, holds all her guilt. And I love all the different scenes of her, you know, seeing Molly Shannon and, you know, her parents and, you know, in trying to, you know, convince her to let go and be with this nice guy, this nice, like, Ryan Cooper guy with Bo Burnham. And, you know, and for the longest time, you are with, you know, you're with Cassie and Ryan, and it's very much a nice, you know, romantic comedy. It's a nice, like, you know, sweet romantic comedy. And then those layers get peeled once the sex tape gets thrown into the mix. So I kind of need to throw this out there. What did you think of the, like the mind games she was playing on the guys?
Like that I was referring to earlier, or like, the other guys that she, seduced and like, well, it's like kind of left ambiguous for what she did to the others towards the beginning. So I'm not really sure exactly what she did, but
I think she kind of just did the same thing that she did to Mintz-Plasse's character. Just like put him in his place and then scare him straight, if you will. Like, I don't think she kills any, like, I don't think she ever kills anyone. Yeah, or
I don't either. She doesn't kill the first guy because the guy she, is going to go home with, but then she sees Bo Burnham. He was at the beginning of the film and he recognized her and knew all about what she had done to his friend, so she couldn't have killed him because he was he had to pass on like the word of what happened in order for him to understand that.
That's why I don't think Cassie is killing people or hurting people. She's just putting them in their place and scaring them straight, or basically giving them an education, if you will, for, you know, like what they are doing is wrong. And that's why I like the, and that's, you know, kind of what I like, because, you know, she, because there's so many ways she could do this. And I feel like in any other movie, she would just be like a, you know, a you know, she would just be a killer. And I think Emerald Fennell was smart enough to make her, make this character a more psychologically rounded character, or you know, smart enough character to where she doesn't have to, she doesn't have to kill or physically hurt people to make a point. She just has to use mind games. And that's why I, and that's one of the reasons why I kind of give Fennell some praise, is because it's, that's, it's not the violence, it's what you can do to the mind that can really, you know, fuck people up or scare them straight. So, and that's, and yeah, and if you, so are you ready to get to the bachelor party scene?
Yeah, I guess so.
Any more notes?
That's kind of the point where I was like taken the furthest aback. Like when she was getting, when she had him handcuffed to the bed and was like gonna start tattooing him, I was like, okay, this is how she gets the ultimate revenge on this guy, and it's all happy ending.
Yeah.
And then he escaped, and I was just like, or well, he got one of his hands free, and I was just like, oh my goodness. And he just like started suffocating her, and well, I was really worried it was gonna kind of get, I was worried he wasn't gonna kill her, he was gonna do other things. And so I was like, I hope we don't have to see that. And then he ended up suffocating her, and I was just kind of in shock at the fact that it happened. And I thought that it was going to have a darker ending in the sense that he was going to get away with it. And that's what I thought it was going to end on. But then when like the, you get the reveal of the letter that she sent to the lawyer, and the text messages start coming in, I was just like, okay, this is kind of where she gets her victory, even though she had to die. Like she kind of had to have a sacrifice, but she was, it kind of lines up more that she would prepare for any, something happening to her, with her character in terms of how resourceful and intelligent she seems to be. So I really loved the ending where the messages start coming in and the police show up. And I was wondering, as the messages were coming in, if she was going to send the sex tape and screw over her ex-boyfriend, Bo Burnham's character, but she didn't. And so I was kind of, that was one thing that was going through my mind as it was happening.
One thing I thought was going to happen was the scheduled message at the end was going to be the sex tape to everyone.
Yeah, that's like, what I thought.
Like everyone was going to get the sex tape, and then the police show up, and it just perfectly timed, of course. And that's one. And I just, yeah, I really, yeah, I think it's, yeah, I think it's great. And I think it's, although I have a question, do you think she loosened any of the handcuffs just so that could happen, or do you think he just, Matt, somehow got out of it?
I don't think she would. Well,
she could plan her own death.
That is possible, and you can rationalize it in the sense that it would fit into the grand scheme of her plan, and he could get in more trouble for her death than the fact he sexually assaulted her friend several years ago and kind of got off scot-free. So if you think about it, that is very possible, but she did kind of seem taken aback. So it's possible. I'm not sure. I might have to rewatch it, but I can see it either way.
Yeah. Cause that's one of the things that came through my mind, is like, how much of this did she plan? Like, did she plan on getting killed?
Like I didn't consider that. Because I didn't really think that was her plan, but it could have been.
I mean, she was doing very well up until, you know, she got suffocated, but because she knocked everybody out. She roofied everybody, which that was a brilliant scene, or that was a very well shot scene. And then, you know, I mean, she was just doing very well, and you're right, she does look caught off guard, but, you know, it just seems so, like, that would be, like, the perfect, like, final nail is if she somehow just planned it all out, like, she was gonna get killed, like, somehow, some way, she was gonna allow it to happen, and that way, you know, his, you know, her death would basically be the, you know, this is what happened. This is, you know, we have to get Al Monroe off the streets.
I think there's enough evidence to support that interpretation. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And then, you know, what's really funny, but also sad about this movie is, you know, Al's relationship with his friend. That's very, very similar to Cassie and Nina's. Where they're like, oh, we're lifelong friends. We stick out for each other. And then the funniest thing about, and then the funniest thing later, 5 minutes later, he sees the cops and just runs the F away. It's just, yeah. Yeah, I really like this. And one of the other things I love about this movie is the candy color lighting or candy look to the, everything. It's very lipstick looking, if I can put it correct. It looks very, very much lipstick, and it's not that chrono coldness that you would expect from this kind of movie, you know, or Gone Girl. Not bashing on Gone Girl, but, you know, I think, you know, Emerald Fennell crafts this wonderful tone of, like, this is a candy colored, you know, looking movie, but it's still, like, we're still having conversations about rape culture and the power dynamics of, you know, men and women, especially when they're drunk. That's one of the things that I took away from it. So what else can we say about Promising Young Women? We very much did love this movie.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites of last year. Highly, highly, highly recommend you watch it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do recommend watching it. And I don't know if it'll be on my top 10, but then again, I really don't remember that many movies, or I remember seeing that many movies from 2020. So, but it is a great movie. It is a very, very good movie. I was saying to someone earlier, I don't know why I'm so soft on it, but I love, because I do love the movie. I just don't know why I'm like, I don't know. I think Mank is better, you know, or this movie's a little better, you know, but yeah. But one thing we got to talk real quick is, do you think Carey Mulligan has a chance at the Oscars?
I want to say yes. I don't. No, you know, this doesn't feel like a very traditional awards friendly movie. So I think it's unlikely. However, this is a very unusual year, and I don't feel like there's a lot of competition for Best Actress at the moment. I mean, there are definitely heavy contenders, like, you have Frances McDormand and Viola Davis, but, like, that doesn't feel like there's, like, a lot of strong contenders for Best Actress. Like, there's three right there that I just named. So there's only, like, you would have to fill two more slots plus, and I'm sure you can if we sit here and think about it. Like, Elizabeth Moss from Invisible Woman would be a good choice, but I don't know that movie's going to get the Oscar campaign for that to happen as much as I would love for it to.
So, it's weird Universal wouldn't. Because that movie came out so strong earlier last year that, you know, and had basically disrupted the whole discourse. And even now people are still talking about it. So it's kind of weird that, so you haven't seen a For Your Consideration page or anything like that for Invisible Man?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, there might be one. I just don't know about it.
Okay, because I would suspect, at least Moss would get some consideration. I can understand I can understand Peel or not Peel, Blumhouse getting or Blum getting, a Best Picture nom or Lee Whannell getting a screenplay nod. But yeah, it would just be weird to not give that. And I'm sure we can think of one more person we can nominate, but right.
I would just have to sit here and think about it or look
Olivia
up like a
Colman.
list. Oh yeah, I haven't seen The Father, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I've heard good things about it, so it's very possible. I
I
want Carey Mulligan to get nominated. I just don't know how likely it is. So I don't want to hype myself up for something that may not happen.
And honestly, if I'll even put this out there, I think I've not seen Nomadland and I've not seen Moraine yet. She's in my book is the best performance of the year. Because what she demonstrates in this movie and how she creates Cassie in this movie, it's very similar in terms of the kind of performance that Glenn Close gives in Fatal Attraction. The kind of dynamic and layers, and it's just worth, it's a worthy nomination. It's a worthy nomination, a very worthy win. Even though I'm sure we'll be saying things differently if we ever get to see Nomadland.
I have seen Nomadland.
Oh, you have all? Oh, you did?
Yeah. And I actually do prefer this performance over. I mean, Frances McDormand's great and all, but I do actually prefer this performance, at least. I don't know. I'm also kind of in the camp of, I feel like if you've won multiple Oscars, do you really need another one? So I'm always behind giving someone their first Oscar over rewarding someone for the third or fourth time. So I think it would be more exciting to go with Mulligan.
Right. Well, for me, the reason to give it to Mulligan is because I really haven't seen her in much since. I don't even remember what her last movie was. I
looked it up and it was something I'd seen, but
was it Mudbound?
I think so, but it may have been something in between. Great Gatsby was a few years before that.
Mm-hmm.
Wildlife.
Oh, Paul Dano's movie, right? Wow, that was a minute. Man, I can't believe I forgot about that. Oh, wow. Okay. I'll have to rewatch that because I've been here. I haven't seen it. So I'll have to watch it. So, yeah. All right. So you're going more for Mulligan in terms of if it was your choice, Mulligan would be your pick.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we've said everything about we need about both movies. Do you have any more thoughts on either film?
Go see Promising Young Woman.
Yes. Sorry, Paul Greengrass and Tom Hanks, but Promising Young Women's just really good. maybe News of the World will look better on a 4K or on a TV. I don't know. Anyway, thanks. So, David, do you have a blog?
Yeah, I do. It's called Film Assessment. I haven't posted my reviews for the films we just talked about yet, but they're written. I'm working on doing, I do them in a, I started this format called Real Recap where I kind of do a brief recap of everything I watched within a month or 2 months or whatever. And so I'm having to work on catching up on those from last March. And so I'm going backwards. So I have December's ready. It's just whenever I publish that, it should be in the next few weeks. But the blog's called Film Assessment. You can find it on Twitter at that handle. And then you can find me on Twitter at Weiser_David.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter at MovieKale. I don't know what the next episode will be precisely. I can say we haven't done, for 2020, we haven't done Sound of Metal, Mulroney's Black Bottom. Obviously, we have not done Nomadland. Somehow, Cherry, the Russo Brothers Cherry, is getting roped into 2020. Y'all do the math on that one. Minari. We've not talked about those five movies yet, and so we'll go through those accordingly when they come out. Sound of Metal and Mulroney's already out on Netflix and Amazon Prime. But we'll talk about those on the show whenever is possible. Those will be the next few podcasts, and then I guess Warner Brothers will release something on HBO Max. We don't know if they're going to give their producers profits ahead of time. We don't know anything.
I think Judas and the Black Messiah is going to go to HBO Max no matter what. So that's one to talk about.
Oh yeah, perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect. And so we'll kind of just keep talking about award-worthy movies. And we also haven't done One Night in Miami, Regina Hall's movie. So
Regina King.
Is it King?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Regina Hall is from The Hate U Give, right?
I think so. I don't know.
Oh gosh. Okay. Regina King's new movie. All right. All right. Great. So we will keep talking about those. And David, thank you for being on the show. And we'll be back with y'all probably next Monday when we talk about some movie. I don't know. We'll figure it out between now and then.
Maybe that one's too hard.
All right. Thanks, David.
Cassandra. Here. We're in class together at Forest. You would have been a great doctor. What happened?
I left under unusual circumstances.
You remember what happened, right? Why I dropped out.
I'm not the only one who didn't believe it.
We get accusations like this all the time.
Who needs brains? They never did a girl any good.
I'm so sorry I didn't go with her.
You gotta let it go.
What are you gonna do?
I don't know.
Why do you guys have to ruin everything? We were kids.
If I hear that one more time,
I have to give him the benefit of the doubt. I was hoping you'd feel differently by now.
It's every guy's worst nightmare getting accused like that.
Can you guess what every woman's worst nightmare is?
I wanted to be a doctor my whole life.
Lately, I've been feeling like I might want to get back into it.